There is more treasure in books than in all the pirates' loot on Treasure Island. Supreme Lord of the Mouse, Walt Disney, said that. I don't know your stance on the matter, but I think when you get to a certain level of prestige, you just have to say something inspirational about books, otherwise the mass media starts making up conspiracy theories about you cryogenically freezing your corpse until technology allows for reanimation. This is Illiterate, and I'm Taylor Z, your ferryman down the river of quick and dirty book dissection each week, the book being your mangled frog in fifth period bio, and me being your pimple-faced lab partner brandishing the forceps. The new conspiracy, by the way, is that the Walt Disney Corporation tried to get rid of the old cryogenic conspiracy by making a hit musical film so huge and titling it Frozen, so that any search correlating that word and his name would be buried deep in the interwebs. If there's one thing we know, it's that you can't spend millions of dollars and make a blockbuster film and expect some guy thinking in the shower to not figure it all out. Yo ho ho, we're talking about pirates today, and not just any pirates, pirates with an exclamation point. The Pirates in an Adventure with Scientists is the title of the book, and if you can't get down with an exclamation point in the title, then too bad, it's there, and I have to say it like that every time. But bear with me, for there's gold to be found in the treasure chest of virtuosity that is this short and silly book. Shooting out into the stratosphere with this one, but here's an impossible question. Why are books the page length they are? A lot of people would say the length has to do with what's sellable, what's worth people's time. Rock hard fact right here. Books have inflated in size. We're talking novels and the like, increasing an average of 80 pages for a best-selling book since 1999. That's 25% larger. Here's some conspiracy theories in honor of Walt D's frozen rigor mortis husk. Do we just need more story since becoming accustomed to television series binges? Or do we just like flipping pages, and the publishers want to give us more of the goods to fondle our fingertips across? Or are the notable and award-winning books hella long, and people think that's the reason they win awards, and it's a vicious cycle until there will only be one best-selling award-winning book that's an infinite number of pages because every book ever written gets added to it, and at the end of each section there's just a page with the word meanwhile, and I'll be forced to cancel my Hulu Premium subscription to read up on what I'm missing? Whatever the case, Pirates, with an exclamation point, is a short book, and it came out in 2004, before all this long book fluff happened. It's great, otherwise I wouldn't be talking about it. The best thing I could come up with to describe Pirates is like a children's book for adults. It's not an adult children's book, because those have only one joke, like, oh, this book looks like a kid's book, but it's about sex, or it's a bedtime story and there's curse words. No little kid could read this, haha. I'm gonna put it back on the clearance table at the front of Barnes & Noble and go to Target. And why are they always together in the same shopping complex? What's Walt Disney hiding now? What makes it a children's book for adults, then, I hear you ask? Why do we need more of these sorts of books, you ask again? Why do they keep making Pirates of the Caribbean movies, I ask? Who is watching those movies anymore, the world asks. Well, grab your scalpel, and let's get into it. Written word, video, audio. This is the triumvirate of content consumption. Up, 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 you say. Video games. Video games is there too, yes. But I want to use the term triumvirate and not quadrumvirate, because I have diagnosed mild hippopotamonstrosesquipedaliophobia, the fear of long words. Here's my media theory. The written word surrenders the most control to the user. On the other side of the scale, videos are the most passive, controlling when and what and for how long you see and hear and absorb, which is why couches were invented. And audio controls the pacing and what you absorb, however you have to picture it in your head. But books, my God, they just sit there with their words on a page, and you gotta do all the work. You gotta read them, imagine them, space out the timing. Video games we do not discuss, obviously, because of my mild hipposquashosaurus megriddleophobia. I think a lot of book and audio creations miss out on their chosen medium because they secretly all want to be movies. Pirates uses the written word exactly as it should be. It's a goofy comedy, and I'm not going to take the forceps to this frog, but the attention to detail and word choice is sublime. It's written by Gideon Defoe, and God bless the man, because the dry, fine wine of British humor is in full force. It's not because of fancy words or overly descriptive phrases. So how can a book make you laugh? By letting you do the work. The pirates go on wacky adventure and meet Charles Darwin and dress up like scientists and foil a plot by a bishop with a heinous device that takes the life essence of young women, which he accrues from hosting ladies' nights at the circus. It's all wonderfully convoluted, and you feel like you're watching a smart and sassy Saturday morning cartoon, but in your head, The words don't get in the way. Another thing that Pirates does with the written format is play with the expectations of the tropes of being a book. Example 1, footnotes. I love footnotes, as evidenced by 94.3% of what I say in this show qualifying as secondary or tertiary information. Pirates has got footnotes galore, and most of them have to do with actual pirating or scientific facts, which breaks up the malarkey going on in the story quite nicely. Usually comedy footnotes are just more comedy, and if there's one thing I don't want with my entree of comedy, it's a side of comedy. There's a comprehension exercise at the back of the book, similar to those tomes you just know are written as shoo-ins for 10th grade class discussions. It satirizes the presumed notion of a good book also having to be serious, with discussion questions like, 1. What do you think the themes of this book were? Several commentators have described the main theme as pirates. Another theme might be said to be ham. Would you agree? There's also a words to know section in the back with 5 basic shipworthy words and the word ham, and no definitions or context beside them, just a cloud of words that you should know. It's everything I've ever wanted. Ahoy! We must go back to the salty topic of length. Well, let's talk about the shape of this book first, since nobody does that. It's rectangular, maybe a cell phone and a half tall, and as wide as a pair of sunglasses. That's the official measuring system for books when things are nearby it on a table. This bad boy is seductively thin. I don't have anything good on my table to compare it to, but it's 100-something pages, a girthy yet not patronizing typeface size. Pictures at the chapter headings, strong hard back, strong hard front. I got the hard front version. Everybody wants that hard back. Could you get a soft front and a hard back? Is there such a thing? I guess you could make your own soft front if you smushed it around a lot or let it soak in 1% milk or something. There's 2 maps on the inside covers of the high seas and London with landmarks like sooty orphans and fog, and a scale with 3 double-decker buses. Cheeky, I think, is how you describe that sort of thing. I'm not a publisher, but I imagine if I was one and I wanted to win awards and be on bestseller lists, that I wouldn't want to publish something so small and silly, and also I'd have a pencil mustache. Random House did, though, and they kept doing it, because there's 4 more adventures with whaling, communists, Napoleon, and the romantics. The first one, with scientists, is the go-to, though. There's also a stop-motion feature movie, but I didn't want to bring it up because it's also very good, and I'm afraid you'll just watch that and forget the book, if you ever did decide to read it. Well, I didn't say read it, though. I'd never say you have to read something. I'm conflicted. Let's talk about something else. The only thing left I haven't talked about yet is the obvious fact that it's about pirates. You cannot go wrong with pirates. I was in an improv troupe in college, and we dressed up like pirates for a whole day and frolicked around campus singing shanties to people and handing out gold chocolate coins, and everyone thought we were drunk, but that's what pirating feels like. We realized later it was also the precise day other students got letters saying whether or not they were accepted into the college next year, and a lot of students did not, and probably could have done without "What do you do with a drunken sailor?" bellowed into their forlorn faces. But maybe not. The open ocean. Cutlasses. Grog. Mermaids. We can thank Robert Louis Stevenson and Treasure Island for our glamorized perception of the salty knaves, but I wouldn't have it any other way. There's something magical, mythical, and whimsical about pirates that you can't get from cowboys or ninjas or vampires. And also something a bit sexual, which I'm sure we can all appreciate from time to time. Avast, our final question that needs answered. Who's watching Pirates of the Caribbean movies anymore? Slip into your statistical sweaters, because here's where the numbers get interesting. The ticket gross alone for the first film was $650-ish million, followed by Pirates 2, 3, and 4, averaging about $1 billion each, and Film 5 getting just under $800 million. The Rotten Tomatoes scores, however, steadily declined from 79% fresh to 30% smush over the course of the films. So who's watching them and buying all these tickets in spite of the abysmal critical reception? The only explanation is pirates. Pirates are filling the theaters because in spite of the rehashed plots and lackluster characters, and I don't actually know because I only saw the first movie, pirates always support fellow pirates. Once you think about it for at least 16 seconds like I did, that's really the only answer. As you have heard, and are probably disappointed by, I haven't gotten into the plot or individual story elements of the book very much because I won't do it justice. And that's what I'm trying to get at. I didn't want to presume on this show that anyone should read anything. But I have fallen into the Davy Jones locker of true recommendation, because it's a book that's good for being a book in a space that shouldn't allow for short, satirical, pirate-based educational adult comedy. It's proof that you don't have to swim through a lengthy story to enjoy it. There doesn't have to be some deeper meaning or have a purpose so serious Oprah needs to recommend it. It's fun and adventure with a strong skeleton of the craft so you don't have to worry about the bones jangling about underneath. It's like eating some Oreo-O's and watching a Saturday morning cartoon cross-legged on the carpet. It's like reading a Pirates of the Caribbean fanfiction that John Cleese wrote in his trailer during Monty Python, while he was also feeling a bit flirty. It's silly, and I laughed out loud, and earmuffs over the kids for this, but if nothing else matters to you, it's goddamn pirates. Pirates! P.S. Up! Did you spot the lie? There is no service called Hulu Premium. I made it up, so if there is ever one giant megabook taking over the earth, I won't have to worry about canceling. Next week, we dig into The Mezzanine by Nicholson Baker, where we discuss a whole book about a guy going up an escalator.